Welcome to the Aphorists. It is February 1st, 2013. It is 9:15 in the evening, and we are leaving the Mission Street parking lot in my truck. We just saw Django together. This is Aphorist number one, Jesse Holding, with Aphorist number two,
Anthony Ryan.
Yeah. So we've been not talking about it. What'd you think, man? That was great. That was some crazy Tarantino fucking excess.
It was nutty, yeah. I have the same ambivalent reaction to it that I think I had to, what was the other one?
Inglourious Bastards. What's your ambivalence?
I think he does some things well, and he does other things not as well.
Like, what kind of things?
I thought that was fascinating about this movie is that it was, like, there was, like a huge part of it was basically, like, a parlor drama.
Yeah.
I was not ready for that.
He likes the civility. Remember in Inglourious Basterds, like, to me, the... Hold on a second.
The basement shootout. He likes to follow it up with some bloodletting, though. It'd be like if,
He likes these really... He likes...
If at the end of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, everybody died in a blaze of glory.
That is rich. I think these sort of, like, moments of civility punctuated with fountains of blood is... Mm. That's the thing, you know? And I think he's actually really smart.
Yeah.
He,
I don't know if I can.
So look. Well, I mean, yeah, check it out. Smart, look, but these are things that people do to each other in real life, in the real world, right?
Oh, like slavery.
Slavery happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Nazis happened, right? The horrendous things we do to each other as humans. He makes us look at that.
Yeah.
It's interesting because he makes it gratuitous, right? Like the beating is as sort of like gratuitously done as the other things that he's making happen in the movie, like the gunfights, right?
Mm-hmm.
The gunfights are actually over the top compared to the violence that was, like the guy whipping Django in his...
That was some pretty amazing gunplay, I gotta say.
Yeah, totally.
Pretty unprecedented. Like, yeah. Just like the... I loved how everything was so backlit and just, like, juicy. Mm-hmm. Just, like... You just love that exploding blood.
Uh-huh. No, it's incredible. Hang on, are we going to the Whole Foods?
Whole Foods in Petrero Hill.
Got it. I'm going to take Harrison and then take a left on 16th then. Okay?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I thought the Steven character was really... Leonardo DiCaprio was fucking amazing in that movie. Like, he is such a brilliant actor. Holy shit.
He's never going to get the nod for anything.
Isn't he up for supporting for this one?
Is he? Oh, okay, good.
Because that was a tour de force. Holy shit.
But then...
Sorry. The guy who plays Steven.
Samuel L. Jackson.
The way they were playing off each other was just so brilliant.
Yeah.
I had some serious verisimilitude problems with this movie.
Uh-huh.
Number one, like, I thought Candyland looked like Mississippi.
Yes.
Then suddenly they were in the California hills.
Oh. Yes.
And,
so it became, like too
Western-y? I have a big pet peeve about, like, southern movies that are supposed to be taking place in the south that are taking place in... Like, where the fucking Mississippi looks like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been to Mississippi.
The golden hills of California with, like, oaks.
Right.
Anyway,
I don't know. That's your beef? Like, if it was setting a tone.
Yeah, that's a beef. That takes me out of the movie big time.
Interesting.
Not to mention Quentin Tarantino with the Australian accent.
Maybe
that takes me out of the movie a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, he likes to take you out of the movie. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know, like, you hip hop on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
You know what I think, like, what this movie reminded me a little bit of, and I actually think it was a better movie? was Manderley.
I don't know that one.
It was Lars von Trier, and it was a sequel to, it was sort of like, yeah, it was basically a sequel to,
Dogville, I don't know. It's a
Western. There's a great couple of movies. No, it was, great couple of movies he made that were like, he basically shot them in a sound stage.
Mm-hmm.
And he like had chalk lines on the floor for all of the, for the set, for the different buildings on the set.
Mm-hmm.
But it took place in a, it took place in a plantation, but it was in like the 1930s. But it was like a plantation where like all the slaves were still, or like all the blacks that worked the plantation were still essentially living in slavery.
Huh.
So is it a revenge
really
movie?
Good.
What's that?
Is it a revenge movie?
No, but it's real stagey. Obviously, yeah. Like it looks like it's on a soundstage. Like,
right.
Literally.
Got it.
I don't know, it would maybe be too much to get into it, but...
Right.
I guess I was thinking of it because, like, this movie was so stagey. Like,
it was very stagey.
And, I liked that about it.
Mm-hmm.
The Steven character, oh, man.
See, he kind of so irritated good. Me the most.
Why?
I don't know. I mean, maybe just to see... That's just not how I see Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh,
I mean,
interesting.
You
know what? My wife and I saw an August Wilson play a few years ago at ACT called Gem of the Ocean.
Okay.
And it was awesome. And it was one of his, like, cycles of plays, you know.
Oh, really?
Takes place... They all take place in Philadelphia, right? I think.
I don't know.
But there was a character that was, like... And it was, like, turn-of-the-century Philadelphia black community.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a character who was this guy who... He basically sort of colluded with, like, sort of the racist elements in town that were, you know, intended to sort of keep blacks in their place. And, like, he was this really pained, like, broken character. And the actor... I don't know his name, but I've seen him at ACT before. He's an amazing actor, but, like, it was just a similar role and, like, you know, in that play, I guess, maybe had more depth than the Steven character in this.
Right.
And he was kind of, like, purely malevolent, right? And ultimately just pathetic. And
right. Stupid. Well, and I don't know. Samuel L. Jackson actually running the plantation, and Stephen, I mean, that relationship made sense to me, I guess, but that they had to put on certain kind of roles, or, you know, he was his yes man, his
attaboy.
He was the fool, but he actually ran the show. Yeah, that's interesting. So between Django and Zero Dark Thirty, which did you like better? I mean, they're hard to compare.
Oh, Zero Dark Thirty.
You did.
Yeah.
I definitely like Django much better.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I got a little bored in Zero Dark Thirty, to be honest.
Hmm. I like, I really like spy thrillers and stuff. Which
yeah,
is what
yeah.
I kind of think of,
mm-hmm.
I kind of think of Zero Dark
no,
Thirty.
No, for sure. It was totally threat. I mean, I shouldn't say I was necessarily bored, but it was just, well, a couple
Zero Dark Thirty made me think a lot more than this movie did.
Really? Yeah.
This movie didn't... I can't say this movie made me think about slavery that much, to tell you the truth.
Right. I guess I'm curious about the public reaction to both these films was pretty strong. Like, there was pretty heavy reactions to both these films. You know, people accusing... From people accusing her of being in Bigelow and, you know, in the pocket of the CIA... To,
that's a whole nother can of worms.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then people saying, like, this is inciting, that Django is inciting, you know, some kind of racial tension in America. It's like, racial tensions exist in America.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's like, you know, to not acknowledge the you know, pretty recent brutality that was perpetrated
against...
Yeah,
like, a whole half of the country was based on a slave economy.
Yeah.
It's like,
Locke.
Yeah.
That
wound isn't going to heal overnight.
Yeah. Right? And so, but here's the thing that I like about Tarantino is that he sort of like, if you're thoughtful, mm-hmm. There's a way to heal. Through both his movies, Inglourious Basterds and Django.
Well, then it's pure catharsis, though.
It's pure catharsis, and there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't have to be... Yeah.
I would say...
I mean,
if I can on that level, I would say... Well, again, I'm not black, so I don't deal with the legacy of slavery directly in that way, but...
Right.
I'm also not Jewish, whatever, but, like, I would say... to me, the catharsis in Inglourious Basterds was... a little more profound, even though I was very conflicted about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just is something that makes me uneasy about playing out this historical revenge fantasy, like, in a Hollywood movie.
Mm-hmm.
It seems, like, trivializing in a way that's, like, makes me uncomfortable.
See, I don't know, really. See, I just feel the opposite. I feel like the power of film is that it can make you feel like these really visceral reactions, mm-hmm. and really put you in this mindset one way or another.
Yeah.
And you know that, and then it's over. You know, and you run through these emotions. I mean, the hero's journey, that kind of journey is you know, that's what it's all about. I mean, at some fundamental level, right?
Yeah.
And so I guess. Like, for me, it feels very... Those both feel very successful. So, speaking of catharsis, I think Zero Dark Thirty is...
Did not offer that, right?
Did and did not. I mean, it offered, or it talked about maybe, like, the... maybe it talked about the way you don't get a catharsis at some time, even though you achieve your revenge fantasy, right?
I think that was the whole point of the final scene in Zero Dark Thirty, where she's looking into the camera.
At the end, when she's being flown out of in the
jet. I thought that was the point. It was like, right? This is a pariahic victory, if ever there was one.
Pyrrhic,
sorry.
Yeah.
You know, that's why some of the criticism of that film baffled me.
Right.
Like, Glenn Greenwald called it, like, Top Gun, which was, like...
That's
it.
I mean,
I'm just starting to think he's just an asshole, but...
Yeah. Well, just also, I mean, they also had to think that I didn't feel like the CIA came off looking particularly great. I mean, it felt like it was fairly condemning. You think? I mean, that's what it's sort of like to say.
It made it seem like that organization is basically incompetent.
Right.
But for a few people that will actually, like, be really focused on,
right.
on it. And, you know, I think...
Nature of the work is not very clear, right? Like, the fact that you can't... There are certain things you can't know. You can't know what someone's going to do all the time. And so...
And I thought, like, I don't think it was out of bounds to point out that, you know, CIA people got killed in this.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's one thing that movie did that people forget. And, like, I know... You know, I know we're all supposed to be good liberals and hate the CIA or whatever, but...
Right.
You know, but... I don't know. What else about Zero Dark Thirty? I don't... It's hard not to... you know, however ambivalent I am about, like, the killing of Bin Laden and all that, like, it's hard not to have just, like, a huge amount of respect for, like, those Navy SEALs and people that are willing to do
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Like, am I just a total dupe to say something like that?
I don't think so. I mean,
like,
guys,
like, these are really dedicated, hugely capable people who are incredibly courageous. It's like, and I thought the movie depicted that, like, in this way that was just, like, real,
Felt really authentic and legit.
Yeah,
and
not, there was no...
It wasn't a training film. It wasn't a rah-rah booster film. To compare it to Lenny Riefenstahl is an offense to me.
That's just dumb.
It's just, yeah, it's just...
That's just somebody just like... That's just like...
What Ann Coulter would say.
Yeah, it's just like you disagree with someone so you compare them to Hitler.
Right.
Or Lenny Riefenstahl.
Right. That's, it's specious. It's offensive.
Yeah, that argument was really annoying.
Yeah. But I did like Zero Dark Thirty and... and one of the things that I really liked about it was just made me think a lot about the differences, between men and women, and the way men treat women. And so, you know, the main character, Maya, I'd be curious if she was a man. Like, if it had been a man instead of a woman that had pursued bin Laden like this, would he have just been ignored as a sort of nut job?
Oh, can you look out for Sarah through this window?
Yeah, I'm looking. Would he have been ignored as a nut job? Or because she was a woman, she could just basically be brushed off as not being, you know, particularly, meaningful or something like that. Like, whatever. Like, let her go on her crusade.
Wasn't there an interesting scene where she's meeting with James Gandolfini,
Leon Panetta, right?
Yeah, Leon Panetta. And and he says,
"Who are you?
You were drafted out of high school."
Oh, right.
And do you know why we did that?
Yeah.
And
she said, "I'm not allowed to talk about it."
That was very cryptic. Yeah,
yeah, it was very cryptic.
Why did they draft him out of high school?
Well, they needed young talent, right? Plus, and they needed people who grew up in the wake.
They needed people who weren't burdened with Cold War baggage. Was right. What I got out of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because that was something that was also touched upon.
Right.
The Mullah Krakatoa.
So, on reflection, what do you think of any more thoughts on Django or Zero Dark Thirty? On reflection, on sleeping on it.
Well, I've had plenty of time to sleep on Zero Dark Thirty.
Right. How about Django? We didn't talk as much about Zero Dark Thirty as I thought we might.
I was thinking, I was thinking about what I said last night, where I said I didn't feel like that movie made me think about, or provoked me to think about slavery in a way that was, just like in a deep kind of way, in a new way.
Uh-huh.
Which I think better movies kind of do.
Right.
Like, I think Mandalay did that really well.
Yeah.
I'll mention that again.
Yeah.
And I think the main difference was the protagonist was white.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe a problematic thing with this movie was how uncomplicated the Christoph Waltz's character, just righteous he was.
Right.
I'll contrast it with in Mandalay, there's the main character. Basically, those movies both, they're almost like this Perils of Pauline model. There's like this female protagonist who gets in these situations where she ultimately loses power and wields power.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember the character's name, but in the she's basically she's the daughter of a gangster. This is Mandalay now.
Right.
And also Dogtown. It's the same character, different actresses. It was Nicole Kidman in Dogtown, and it was Ron Howard's, what is her name? Ron Howard's daughter. Something right. Howard, I can't remember.
Okay.
Which seems very intentional casting on the part of Lars von Trier, especially when you consider what happens to her character.
Huh.
In the movie. So she's a protagonist, and we sort of understand her as sort of this very well-meaning person, sympathetic character. But her efforts to do good are really complicated by the way in which oftentimes being good or doing good ends up being really narcissistic and self-serving.
Right.
And that really plays out in that movie.
Right.
In a way, in Django, it did not. Interestingly at all. The Christoph Waltz character, the Dr. What is his name?
Dr. Fritz.
Fritz.
Fine, Fritz something, yeah.
No, Fritz was the horse.
Right. That was great.
Yeah.
The doctor.
Anyway, so And it made me think, I don't know if that's totally true, because there were things about, I think, just in terms of making you think about slavery, the Leonardo DiCaprio character was maybe the most interesting. I thought the Leonardo DiCaprio character was the most interesting in terms of, like, really thinking about, like, the mentality of someone who would own and brutalize people.
Right.
Although, like, in the end, he was just so purely malevolent that, like, that was not, you know...
Right.
It was not really very helpful in terms of thinking about it in a way that implicates you.
Right.
I would say, like... Maybe that's a good... that's it. So that idea of, like... This would be a good way to bounce back to Zero Dark Thirty, but this idea of, like... So... I'll present this and I'll contrast it with Zero Dark Thirty. So in both Django Unchained and Inglourious Bastards, it's basically like this revenge fantasy in which the audience can live out just bad guys from history getting their comeuppance.
Right.
Full stop, right?
Yes.
Zero Dark Thirty is a in a way, it's a revenge story.
Yes.
This is very much a revenge story. But it also implicates you in a lot of, like, really morally questionable activities.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And this is why I think, as we were saying last night, a lot of the criticism of that film is so specious, because I think, like, to the degree that it does sort of make you feel at all rah-rah about the killing of Bin Laden, it also, like, makes you feel really yucky about, like, feeling rah-rah about the killing of Bin Laden, because you have to realize that, like, our country basically totally, sacrificed its ideals and its principles in order to get that done. And then, again, Pyrrhic victory?
Pyrrhic.
And to, you know, to what end? To a Pyrrhic victory. So, a revenge, yeah. A revenge, you know, the sort of, like, the climax or the denouement, how do you say that?
Denouement,
thank you. In that film is, like, really, really complicated,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's
in a way that the Tarantino revenge fantasies are
not
completely uncomplicated.
Right.
Let's not forget that, like, in the Tarantino universe, you know, all good things come from the barrel of a gun, basically.
Right.
Like, if you're redressing history's wrongs,
it
happens to the... like, yeah. Insane violence. Movie violence.
Right.
That's some weird-ass shit, man. And it's a little weird that the whole culture is just, you know, latching onto it.
But see, I think of it as, like, this, you know, like, you're so powerless about, like, the Brunhilde in the box.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, you're so... Is everyone just running this red light?
That's bizarre, yeah.
You're so powerless. And, like, you just want to fucking kill, right? Like, it's a visceral thing, you know?
But what about all the slaves in Django who don't rise up?
Right, right.
Who don't, who aren't empowered?
Right.
Are they, like, the losers of history?
Well,
like,
see, I mean, I guess that's where it
they're
gets...
They're weak?
Right. If you start... See, I think once you start trying to draw moral... lessons from Tarantino, you kind of get, it gets muddy real fast.
Yeah.
Because, and I don't see them as really, in some ways, as moral tales in that way. I think it's sort of more visceral and just pure sort of like id in a way. You know what I mean? Like, this just feels wrong and I want to kill.
That's the catharsis part.
It's the catharsis part. And so I see them as primarily cathartic films. I mean, also, like, I mean, you look at the Kill Bill movies, too. That's a long revenge fantasy. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, one of the things that was interesting to me, and I think, you know, I think you're right, and I think your take on Zero Dark Thirty is really good.
I don't think that movie is flawed, and I think Mark Bull and Catherine Bigelow,
right,
they thought they were being responsible in ways that they... I think they were blindsided to... Or I think they weren't able to see the ways in which they were being irresponsible in that film.
Right.
Like but what, I don't think example? It's nearly as... Oh, I think the movie sets up... I think this movie does set up a causal relationship between...
Between torture
and finding Bin Laden.
Right. But, there, I mean, is there... You know, like... I guess, right. I think what are you going to think I'm going to say? Just say.
I think it's to say, if you fucking are opposed to torture on moral grounds, it shouldn't fucking matter whether it's effective or not.
Right.
You know, this is what bugs me about, like...
exactly.
You know, when people... You know, when people... This is, like, one of my problems with, like, the anti-death penalty people.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Is that often... Like, remember... what was the guy who was killed at San Quentin just a few years ago?
I don't remember.
A lot of the arguments around, you know, against the killing of... Anyway, there was a few years, for people who don't know, a few years ago, California rarely kills people, but they did. They did execute this guy at San Quentin about 4 or 5 years ago, mm-hmm. and... he was a model prisoner in the time he was on death row. And, anyway, so a lot of the argument towards, like, staying his execution centered around, like, what a good person he had become, or, right. And that just really bugged me, because it's like, look, if you have a moral objection to death penalty, you should be able to defend that if the guy's a monster who totally deserves to die.
Right.
I think.
Yeah.
In fact, if you can't do that, then, same with torture, if right. you can't defend... the principle of not using torture, even in cases where it could lead to, like, you right. know, the ticking time bomb thing, then you're not really arguing.
Right.
You're not presenting an effective argument right. if it can be undermined by the effectiveness of torture.
Right.
So,
totally. Well, and I also think, like, one of the other things that bothers me about it is, it's sort of like, this, so we're worried about torture. Like, what about drone strikes? What about the thing, like, all the terrible shit we do, in the name, like, that we have done historically, it's just sort of like...
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Not to diminish how bad torture is, but it's like, is it any worse than killing civilians in drone strikes? Is it any worse than invading countries for the, you know, blah-de-blah? You know, I mean, it's just sort of like... The things that...
Well, I don't think the people that oppose torture are, like, one-issue people.
No. I agree. Too. But it's sort of like... Yeah, I'm certainly opposed drone strikes.
Yeah.
But I just think, like, of the things that are wrong about what we've been doing in the Middle East, I don't, you know, like, it's just part of it. And that we've done, it's on a continuum, and it's not like, I mean, I was just thinking about the CIA and the Iran-Contra affair.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, 1987, I remember being in high school and watching the testimonies, Oliver North, and just being like... You know, what the fuck are we doing? You know, like, just being incredulous about our use of power in abroad and manipulating and interfering with governments and societies. And it's just...
And then the sort of the jingoism, like,
came out around,
like, you know, who cares? So those, like, people don't look like us. They don't live here.
It's just like, I mean, you look at Vietnam, you look at Korea, you know, like, there's so many things that we've done that we do, that we don't really question or think about so much. I mean, maybe people are, I don't know. But it's like, I don't know. I just see, like, this, I don't know. I guess maybe I'm saying, like, we're making a bigger deal out of torture. Of, like, enemy combatants, whatever that means. I mean, war has changed. I mean, we have changed, like, the world has changed, and there's some things that we really have to reconcile ourselves with. That we don't yet, and I think this is a good movie in that it brings some of these questions to the forefront.
I couldn't agree more about. Yeah, I think it is, like, I think if you're anti-torture, this is actually a good movie.
Right.
So, like, it's disturbing to me how ignorant people have been about, like, people on the left,
right,
about just denouncing this movie out of hand,
right,
oftentimes without seeing it,
right.
It's just incredible.
It's not I mean, I don't feel like this is not. This is. I mean, I think part of the reason this movie is successful to me is because
it charts the evolution of, like, you know, torture was okay in the immediate aftermath of 9/11,
and then it became less okay.
It became less okay, and you know, the character who does it the most is a repugnant character in the film.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's just a horrible... He is the ugly American.
Right.
I mean, you know what I'm thinking of right now is... do you remember at State when we had that visiting artist who was... he was German, and he did these sort of...
Yeah, the memorials.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I do.
We got to find... Mike Reinl knows.
Yeah,
name.
He will.
We got to find his name and link
it. Yeah.
But I remember he made this incredible point that blew my mind, because he did this project where he... it was in one of the former Soviet, you know, satellite countries in Eastern Europe. I'm sorry, I can't remember where. It may have been, like, Poland. But there was a KGB facility that had been sort of, you know, raised... after the fall of the Berlin Wall and all that. And he made a memorial where he took the remains of the building, like the charred remains of the building, and like sort of seated them on the ground on the site.
Yeah.
And he made this amazing connection. He said, this building was used by the KGB. They tortured people here. Prior to that, before World War II, it was used by the Nazis for like similar purposes. And in the War on Terror, it was used as a black site by the CIA or their proxies. That's the other thing. So much torture that happens by our proxies.
Right.
You know, yeah. Saudi Arabia doesn't have any problem with torturing people. They do it all the time.
So, yeah, I mean, he's the ugly... I mean, he is the ugly American. We don't, you know, we don't... I really feel so hard to imagine that this is like... feels like propaganda film for the CIA. I mean, that's just something I don't get about that. The people criticizing that film.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It becomes very ridiculous.
Let's agree that's ridiculous.
Okay, we'll stipulate. The other thing I wanted to talk about, and I think you talked about it a little bit, is the, you know, the role of women and, you know, the gender and femininity in both these movies. Both Django and Zero Dark Thirty was really curious. Like, there were no... Brunhilde was being rescued. Like, she was on the mountain, and there was no other female characters, essentially. No developed female characters in Django. There was that weird... Did you catch that weird woman that was with the guys that ran the dogs on D'Artagnan?
I was wondering if that was...
She had a bandana on and had an accent.
I was wondering if that was Zoe Bell, because I saw her name in the... credits.
What the... I mean, this I know, is such a I weird... Was, like, what the fuck was that?
Maybe that got cut.
Oh, something about like, that character. Like, it seemed like there was something to be developed there, and she was looking through the stereoscope.
Although it's kind of cool that, it's kind of cool that she, and she was not killed in the...
No, she...
Raid.
Yeah, she, was she? Yeah, she was killed. It was just a weird... Like, it's like, it seemed like they were focusing on her, and she seemed like such an aberration in that group. But... Why was she wearing a banana? Why did she always have that double-sided axe? Like, was she some kind of bad... Like, it was just a character that maybe was going to be something and never ended up being...
You know who I want to hear weigh in on this movie?
Who's that?
Fucking Carl Walker.
Oh, yeah. That would be very interesting.
Because, like...
We should look that up.
The whole antebellum... Even the Candyland thing, like this...
Right.
Song of the South, you know, like this sort of... this sickly sweet green, and even like to the blue silks that he was wearing
as the
valet, like that sort of aesthetic of antebellum South. The movie did a really good job of portraying that.
Yeah,
and I just thought it was amazing how naked the artifice was of the film, like. The Candyland plantation itself.
Right.
Like, did you see the steps down to the dirt?
Yeah.
In that one scene? Like, there was no effort to make it look real.
Right. Yeah.
It was so stagey. I thought that was... I really liked that aspect, actually.
Yeah.
But it was really, really odd.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of really weird... I mean, it's part of, like, the... I mean, that's sort
Tarantino,
of like what...
Tarantino, though.
Yeah, it's Tarantino. And that's the whole idea of, like, this civilization puncture... Is it civilization punctures or interrupts our like the savageness of America, of Americans, you know, or of people? Maybe not America. Like, there's that scene in Inglourious Basterds where she's having dinner with her, you know, with the guy that played the doctor,
the Nazi interrogator, right? And it's like, does he know who she is? He's, you know, this very polite interaction, but it's really tense. Like, is he going to figure out who she is? And that she's the girl that escaped him, whatever, 20 years ago. Like, to me, this is in Inglorious Bastards when they're
having... Oh, duh. Right. Sorry.
And, like, to me, that is one of the tensest, fucking, most beautifully staged, crafted film sequences of Tarantino
ever. All the subtext.
And all this... Oh, my God. And it's like... Part of the reason I can't watch horror movies... and actually, it's funny. I think the Culture Gab Fest was talking about this. And Julia Turner... she and I have the same inability to watch horror movies.
Because I didn't know that.
I can't stand them. But like, there's this tension that gets built that I can't handle it. You know, when I know that someone's gonna get slashed. You know, it's like, don't open that door.
So how did you do with the castration scene?
Well, the thing about actually, I thought that scene was kind of weird. But the thing, understatement. In a Tarantino movie, I know it's gonna have a quote unquote happy ending. Meaning the people I'm invested in are gonna be okay because it's a revenge, right? Mm. Whereas in a horror movie, I know what's gonna happen is the people are gonna get killed. But and it's gruesome. It's gonna be gruesome and horrible. But I can't, like, for some reason I get too invested in movies, maybe, or I suspend my disbelief to the point where I have zero disbelief. So I'm, like, so in it that it just scares the shit out of me. I don't enjoy that feeling. Whereas the tension that gets built in a Tarantino movie, I know that I'm going to be rewarded for being uncomfortable, you know? And so that you know, like, watching this guy get killed, like, you have to bear witness to this brutality of the guy being... torn apart by the dogs. But, you know, I don't know if there's a payoff, but it's certainly, you know, dealt with in a different way. I don't know what I'm saying, if there's a payoff and that makes it okay. I know what to expect.
It wraps it up tidy. Yeah. And I would say this is one of the problematic aspects of what he does. It wraps everything up pretty tidily for the audience.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
Right. But I think the act of making you look and then acknowledge that it's you know, painful is, you know, that there's this horrible, painful thing. I don't know. I feel like it's worth doing. Anyway, I think both the movies were interesting. In different ways. I think you're right that at some level, Django was a little bit more facile. Like, it didn't make you feel, didn't necessarily make you feel like any wiser about slavery. But I do feel like it's worth recognizing that this, and we talked about this before, that this did happen and it is legit. It is a legit grievance that
I think it's cool to make something that's wildly entertaining but also is sort of weighted with history.
And that catharsis is great, and then the dubious catharsis of Zero Dark Thirty, or the hollow catharsis, or the Pyrrhic victory. I think it asked a lot of questions, and it made us look at both films sort of make you look at yourself in a way I think is useful and takes you on a journey that is important to go on. And
I guess I'm saying I don't agree that Django did that, but
right,
fair enough.
But so two thumbs up.
I put mine really up
three quarters of the way up for Django and all the way up for Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah.
I think that movie is worth seeing.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed both of them. Although these are the first, both these movies I wanted to see very badly and was just unable to, in part because we were coordinating, in part just because I've been so busy.
Yeah.
But I don't like hearing all of the discussion about them
and then going to see them, because I feel like it ruins it a little bit for me. Like,
it depends on the movie. I don't with Quentin Tarantino, I don't feel like I need to. I don't need to wall myself off from
from
people talking about it before I see it.
Right, but my expectations I kind of know what I'm going to get. Yeah, for sure. So. My expectations were pretty high of Zero Dark Thirty, and I felt like maybe that diminished my enjoyment of the film to a degree. Some of it. So
yeah.
Anyway, so from now on, I'm going to opening day.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
I'm trying to make that happen.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go get these hamburgers.
All right. I love when you leave me in a double parking zone. You can passenger seat.
No problem. Great.